Because although I truly believe that that North Americans or white people would not elect an African under most circumstances, I think that this economic crisis, where it comes to issues of pocketbook and stomach, may influence a larger number of North Americans who might ordinarily not have supported Obama to do so. So I think it's an interesting situation that we're confronted with. And also, for me, I think it's been a very revealing and, in some ways, up to now, a very disappointing period. This election period, this election process season, has been just another occasion where the bankruptcy of the leadership of certainly revolutionary leadership among the African population in the United States has exposed itself to the marrow. It is incredible, and it is something that certainly gives me pause. I have been complaining for many years about, among other things, ideological and theoretical weaknesses in our own movement, sometimes to the dismay of different organizations with which we've had to work, or we've tried to work, or at different times in this country. But it's just incredible that our people, African people, have been deserted by anything that that should look like leadership. The black nationalists who have sworn hatred for the U.S. government and for the fact that the government controls the lives of African people in this country, a pseudo-revolutionary black leftist, whatever the hell that means, have gone over to the side of this Obama person and calling on all the other Africans to vote for them. And so what this has meant, of course, is that the leaders, many of folk who have positioned themselves as leaders of our community, as leaders of our people, have abandoned the people, have deserted the people, have gone over themselves to the imperialist Democratic Party. And it is just mind-blowing to me how what has occurred here is the candidacy of Barack Obama has allowed these closet U.S. Patriots, these white nationalists in black skin, to reveal themselves for who they are. And it's not something that has never happened before in history. Of course, what we've got is a situation where a large number of African petty bourgeoisie or middle class became radicalized, has been radicalized historically because of the limitations that has been imposed on them, their aspirations because of their blackness. And now, with the potential for Obama to become president, that barrier to their entry into the heights of North American or U.S. Society has been removed. And of course, you know, it is a position of the African petty bourgeoisie. It is a middle class foul position, and there's no other thing that you can say about it, because it's as though America is this great place to be if only there were an African president. It's as though America murdering people throughout the world, in Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, or the isolation of Cuba, the assassination of leaders, the criminal behavior that is involved in throughout the world, the activities that are designed to maintain the status quo of the world, of Africa and the rest of the world being there to be exploited by U.S. and European corporations, that all of that is okay as long as you have a Negro who is the president of the United States. And it is, as I said, you know, it exposes more than anything the leadership, those who have posed as leadership for the African masses all this time. And when I look at Obama, what I'm seeing, of course, is that it's just another instance of a fraud, fraudulent leadership, that it is a respectable leadership, as opposed to this leadership that has been closet U.S. patriots. Obama, of course, he comes out as an open American patriot, a U.S. patriot who supports everything about this country and condemns everything that would offend the majority white population, which has benefited from the oppression and exploitation of Africans and peoples around the world. That is what we're looking at. And that is something to behold. And so we've got, again, millions of African people left to the analyses and of the Democratic Party, the ruling class pundits for information and for leadership, supported in this minor role by these Negro leaders of every stripe in this country who are hysterically running to try and guarantee that Barack Obama is elected president. It is an incredible thing to behold.
Now, you made the statement that these forces who you're talking about, who, you know,
I'm talking about Amiri Baraka, who used to be Leroy Jones, and gone the whole gamut. I mean, he's been so many places. You know, we used to refer to him as the windshield wiper because he'd flip-flop so much. And, of course, that's historical. And that's the petty bourgeoisie. Petty bourgeoisie does not have a philosophy or a theory of his own. And so it borrows from time to time from whatever seems to be the strongest position in the world. I'm talking about him. I'm talking about Farrakhan, who the minister Farrakhan, who has told people, you know, don't be dismayed because Obama has denounced him and is a supporter of the Obama candidacy. And a whole array of other forces out there. It's interesting because one of the things that the McCain candidacy and some others have attempted to use against Obama is his association with William Ayers, Bill Ayers, from the Weather Underground, who is someone with whom we've had an indirect relationship. But the thing that we find really interesting is not that Obama would be associated with Ayers, because Obama would associate with anybody to forward. That's something that's been made very obvious. His ability to attack African fathers, denounce reparations, denounce Farrakhan, denounce his minister of 20 years, clearly shows that Obama is capable of doing whatever necessary to get elected. But the thing about Ayers is that he comes from an era, the Student for Democratic Society, from this era of SNCC and what have you, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, that denounced the old left, the old opportunist left of the Communist Party USA, and had characterized themselves as this new force, capable of solidarity with African liberation and capable of, you know, making revolution. And they were involved in these ultra-leftist kind of attacks, some bombings and things like that. He comes from a wealthy family that made it possible for him at some juncture, along with his wife, to come from underground and rejoin society in Chicago. And now he's a renowned educator of sorts, spoken highly of in a lot of different circles. But the thing about it for me is not that Obama would do this, but how it exposes these forces that call themselves the revolution. I'm talking about AIRS. I'm talking about Weather Underground people. I'm talking about these folk who the Black Panther Party, Fred Hampton, who the African People's Socialist Party, Jomo, et cetera, had struggles with all along. Recognizing their capacity to get haircuts and rejoin the American society. So I'm not one of those who says that Obama is a fraud because of his association with AIRS. I'm saying that AIRS is a fraud because of his association with Obama, who is a fraud because he is a charlatan who has joined imperialism at the expense of African people. Listen, the thing that we've known for a long time is that it is possible for an African individual to make it in America. It is the group that is denied success. They would allow an individual to be successful, and especially if that individual will do so at the expense of the masses of African people, which is why Obama, on every instance, has had to denounce African people, has assumed responsibility to denounce African people to be successful in this electoral process. So the masses of African people, I mean, I understand this. I mean, you're talking about a people, you know, so downbeaten that they cannot even find good images of themselves on television and any of the media that suggests that gives validity to the existence of persons who have, you know, settled for buffoons on, you know, on TV, just anything just to validate my existence. I understand this. I understand that how Africans who have been told we are stupid and ignorant and incapable of learning anything can be so impressed with a smooth-talking, suave guy like Obama, who clearly is the more intelligent of the two candidates and has been the most intelligent, best spoken of all the candidates who's been running for office. I understand that. But the problem is that Obama is a fraud, and he does not represent the interest, the best interest of African people. And so people starved by a ruthless anti-African society, white nationalist society, starved of any positive images of themselves, can easily be led to believe that a charlatan, a slick-talking fraud like Obama can represent their best interests. That is troublesome as hell. And because the thing that is even, we're going to see, someone has talked to us in the past about some kind of post-election united effort to communicate with Obama what we want from him. And my argument is that if you were going to make an election, an argument with Obama, after the election is going to be a hell of a time to do it. I mean, you have no leverage. If there was any leverage at all, it was before the election, which is what we attempted in this movement to do, to ask the question, what about this community, Obama? And as opposed to all of those people who now talk about post-election, they're going to talk to Obama, as opposed to them joining us and saying, look, Obama, we might be able to do something with you if you could answer this question in a positive way. They denounced us for answering for asking the question. And so there is no leverage there. And after the election, and it makes it very problematic. We've got a serious struggle ahead of us, and a problem that we have is that we have to struggle against probably have to engage or be involved in a struggle against an African president. Or I should say possibly, because even that still has to be scene. We still got to see what white folks going to do on election day. But but you know we're going to hear arguments from those people who supported Obama about how, well, you got to give him a chance, you know, after, you know, when he initially does all the things that his defenders are saying that he won't do. Even then, we're going to have a period of where a long period of time where they're going to be suggesting that you can't struggle against them, you can't mobilize against them because, you know, you got to give them a chance, and he is the first black president, or you know, this kind of silliness that I think we can anticipate should this guy succeed in becoming president, which I think would be extremely problematic for the future of our folk.
Something that we're seeing around the U.S. right now is real assault on the rights that people are supposed to have according to the Constitution of the U.S., which, of course, African people have never really had access to those rights. But we're seeing a deepening attack on those rights, the rights of free speech, political association, and et cetera. Do you anticipate that with Obama going in, that attack would deepen?
If Obama is elected, I think that the attack will deepen, and I think that it will achieve even greater effectiveness. And one reason I say greater effectiveness, because traditionally African people have been on the front line of any kind of transformative struggles in this country. And Obama has the ability to denounce these struggles as useless, meaningless, or not necessary with his presence in the White House. And the fact is that at least in the past, white presidents, white governments have had to at least give lip service to the interests and bad treatment, past treatments of Africa. Obama doesn't have to do that. In fact, should he become elected, his existence as the president of this country itself becomes evidence of the fact that the racial contradictions have been overturned. And this is one of the criminal things about it, because, it would use the evidence of a single individual's success. This individual's success at the expense of everybody else as a basis for being able to deny rights to African people, assuming now that if we have a contradiction, it's our own problem, because clearly it cannot be a problem of the American system and or government that has just elected a Negro as president. So I think that you can look for more repression that can be directed now more specifically at African people who are talking about overturning this foul relationship that we have with imperialism. Listen, the Democratic and the Republican Party are not revolutionary organizations. And the problem that we are confronted with is that it is going to take revolution. It is going to take a destruction of the relationship that we have with imperial white power, a colonial relationship that we have as African people here and around the world. It is going to take the emancipation of the vast majority of humanity who suffers as a consequence of the imposition of a blood-sucking, parasitic, imperialist system on their lives. It is going to take all of this for us to be free. And as opposed to Obama's presidency representing a move in that direction, it is something that is designed to retard the ability of people achieving the capacity to overturning our relationship with imperialism. And this is part of the problem. We have a situation in this country now, or there is a situation, I should say, in this country now, where there is approaching an $11 trillion debt by the government, where the economy has gone down the tubes, and every day thousands and thousands of people are losing their jobs. And while, you know, people can hear this, it's sort of like in the abstract, if you're not one who has lost your job yet, and to even imagine something like $11 trillion is beyond the capacity of most of us. But the fact is that This crisis that we have been seeing for a long time now is now revealing itself economically. And the fact is that the American economy, like the entire world economy, a successful component of the world economy, rests upon a pedestal of slavery and colonialism. And it is suffering crisis now because of the successes over the last few decades of people taking back their freedoms from India to 47, China 49, 50, Cuba, struggles all over the world in the 50s, 60s, of course, that was characterized most by what we saw happening in Vietnam, you know, people taking back their freedoms. And it is this that is undermining the pedestal upon which the entire imperialist economic system is sitting. So what does it mean? It means that if whoever is president, whoever in this country becomes president, in order for them to reverse the losses, the problems of the system itself, it has got to must discover ways to reimpose a parasitic death grip on the rest of us. So the thing that makes Obama significant is because he is like the Indian scout who can help the whites to defeat different Indian population. He is the guy who looks like us. And when I say us, I don't mean just Africans here and Africans around the world, but he is one of the darker peoples of the world, which can at least temporarily allow him access to a greater capacity to push us back than any white president could have done. I've read where even in China, there are discussions about how meaningful it is that a non-white person might get elected president of the United States. So it is extremely problematic. And again, because the only way out for the system, we talk about this economic crisis, it can only resolve the crisis at the expense of the freedoms, the rights, the sovereignty, the resources of Africans and other oppressed peoples around the world. And it doesn't matter who is the president. That's what's going to have to happen. And to wish that somehow we had a Negro who was at the helm of this situation of oppressing and exploiting rest of the peoples around the world is just an extraordinary statement of opportunism that I never thought I would live to see occurring among African so-called leaders in this country.
We have, I want to open it up for the callers and those who are in the studio to participate with questions. You can call the U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599. It's country code 001. You can call the UK number, which is 020-8133-6629. That's country code 44. Or you can call us through Skype anywhere in the African world. Skype ID is Uhuru Radio. That's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. We have a email. The listener asks, can you speculate on why Colin Powell endorsed Obama, considering the fact that he was part of the Bush administration?
Well, because he is a representative of white power. I mean, they are not as silly as we are. I mean, so Colin Powell, but not only Colin Powell, the guy who was Bush's press secretary, I can't think of his name, who just came out supporting this guy, Obama. Bill Clinton came out supporting Obama, and he's supposed to have a problem with him. And as Hillary Clinton is campaigning for Obama, and they're supposed to have a problem, but they all represent the same class and the same social system. So Powell has been a good servant of imperialism, and it didn't matter to him which imperialist he was serving, because he has served under Democratic candidates as well. He's not, you know, just served he was in the Bush administration, but he's been there. He's been there in the military among the top of forces in the military with political relationships with the Republicans and with Democrats.
So, any questions from the studio?
Chairman, really appreciate what you're talking about and the last comments that you were making about the danger of Obama. I remember the situation in Philadelphia where Mayor Wilson Good, the first black mayor, was able to carry out much greater terror against the African community than could have happened under Rizzo, as you had summed up, because if Rizzo had dropped a bomb on the African community, the whole city would have gone up in flames. But Mayor Good was able to do that. I was also going to ask about the Powell endorsement, and wonder if you could talk a little bit further about Powell as an example of, you know, the role that Powell played in launching the war, and also the comments that Powell made regarding the anti-Muslim, the comments he made regarding the Muslim, the question of Muslim and Islam.
Yeah, that's, you know, like the Powell. The thing about Powell that's significant, it's really an interesting situation that we have. You'd have to be a fool, a frothing-at-the-mouth idiot to be an African in this country and not recognize the depth of hatred, animosity, disdain, disregard that is held by the general white population and, generally speaking, institutionally, against African people in general, on the one hand. On the other hand, a trustworthy Negro is highly loved and respected by white folk. It is like the old Aunt Jemima. While, you know, I mean, just so beloved, takes care of the children, trusted more than anybody, and with good reason. Generally speaking, they look out, as Malcolm X used to say, they looked out for the master better than the master looked out for himself. And so, but you know, you had the situation where Powell went before the United Nations and made more or less the same statements that George Bush and all the other white folk had been saying and lying about these weapons of mass destruction, which, by the way, Saddam is a fool for not having had to, obviously. But come and he makes the same statement that Bush and the white folk in his administration had been saying about the existence of weapons of mass destruction, and because it's Powell who makes the statement, because he is a trusted Negro. A trusted Negro is more trustworthy even than the ordinary white people, all important white people, and so he says it, and that means it must be all right. Because a trusted Negro would never stand up before the world, and especially before white people, and tell a lie. Right. This is one of the reasons O.J. Simpson is hated so much, because he was a trusted Negro. They trusted him with white women. They trusted him with money. They trusted him with endorsements, you know, et cetera. And then, you know, after this thing happened, he broke their hearts and they acted with a subjective vengeance against him because of that and some other factors. So this is why, you know, who are the most suspected businesses or corporations? What are they? You know, like car dealers and things like that. People are extremely suspicious and insurance salesmen. But if you want to sell your insurance, the best way to do is to ask, are you in good hands? I mean, to have a Negro, you know, like who does this? Because there's this whole thing that's recognized that if you're a Negro and a good Negro, you can be trusted by white folk and white folk. And so in this instance, that's what the Powell, you know, thing, I think, represented. I think in many ways, that's what Obama has been working very hard to allow the North American population to understand him as a good Negro, one who is not simply there, but one who is capable of attacking other Negroes who white folk might find threatening. You know, so I think that has to do with I think that's what that relationship is all about. I think that's what the Powell thing is all about, and that, you know, makes it possible for him to be understood and appreciated so much by imperial white power.
And on the Muslim, the question of the Muslim, comments.
Question is really interesting because it is a contradiction of that the ruling class sectors of, you don't have a homogeneous stance in the a ruling class around this question. You don't have a homogeneous stance around this Christian fundamentalism that George W. Bush and his crew so seriously believe in, or
nor is there a homogeneous stance around the question of Israel in among the ruling class itself. There are divergent political views among the rulers in this country, and to the extent that the bourgeoisie can succeed, or a sector of the bourgeoisie can succeed in alienating the Muslim population, it gives them opportunity to carry out a really vicious kind of foreign policy objectives in the Middle East. And there are some forces who, among the ruling class, and Powell is probably one of those representatives who would like to see what they characterize as a more even-handed approach to Israel, to the Middle East, as opposed to going in with the bludgeon and trying to rip off everything. There is a sector of the bourgeoisie that talks about a reasoned approach and how to deal with this question better, trying to take the edge out of the religious issue and try to force the policy determinations based on interests, to be able to see interests and not simply so identify interests with religion. And so it represents a whole different approach. And also, Obama himself is appealing to sectors of the Muslims in this country for his election, who are so opposed to what the Bush regime, et cetera, and those other forces are doing in the Middle East. So there is a need to try to calm this question, because some of you may remember when there was a woman who was apparently a Muslim who appeared at an Obama rally and was moved from behind Obama, where she would be in the view of the cameras because she had on a headscarf. And nobody wanted Obama to be associated with the Muslim. And also, by taking this issue on as Powell has done, he also moves to try to defuse the question as something that could impact Barack Hussein Obama in the consciousness of people, you know, out there in the world. So that's, and I think those are factors that contribute to his need to bring up the Muslim issue in his endorsement of Obama.
We're talking with Chairman Amala Yeshitela, Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, about the electoral process, the election that is currently happening in the U.S., as well as other things that you might want to ask him. So we're going to take a break here, though, and come back momentarily with more discussion here on AhuaRadio.com.
Black.
Uru, and welcome back to WhoRadio.com.
I'm down with the.
We're talking here with Chairman Omalia Yeshitela, the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, about the elections that are occurring right now in the U.S. You can call in or email in to participate in this discussion. U.S. number is 727-565-1599. That's country code 001. Or you can call the U.K. number, which is 020-8133-6629. That's country code 44. You can call us through Skype. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio. That's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. We have a email that came in. And this is from Diop, who says, Uhuru Chairman, this discussion is highly significant. The Uhuru movement understands that no matter how slick Obama talks, he cannot explain away the deepened attacks on the community. We are in Philadelphia, where at least one African has been killed every month for the past 3 months. Neocolonialism cannot condemn the state for these attacks. Only the revolution can. The people are ready. We will be holding a mass protest in Philadelphia tonight at the World Series in unity with the recent actions against the Jevon Dawson laws in St. Petersburg. We will also let the world know that Philadelphia is the city that kills Africans for sport. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, when we did that action in St. Petersburg, Florida, at an Obama town hall feel-good meeting, and we got thousands of responses from throughout the country, and many of them were hostile. And some of them call themselves leftists and nationalists, you know, raising stuff about, you know, what do you do? You know, what kind of stuff you do? What are you doing for the people, et cetera? And obviously, the person who raised that question is somebody who has no knowledge of the history of our movement. And I just find it incredible that someone would ask us that question. As a part of the process of denouncing us for asking Obama, who is attempting to be the president, that question. What do you do for our community? But our members of, you know, we involved just in the last 2 days, from Monday through Thursday, we were involved in a West African regional conference to bring Africans together to get organized to take back our Africa. We have similar conferences that will be occurring in Southern Africa and in Central America and here in North America and in Europe. And we, as Comrade Diop was mentioning in that email, busy in Philadelphia and have been for years, have been since 1986, after the government, a neo-colonial government with a black mayor and a black chief of police, dropped a bomb on an African community. And these were Democrats. In fact, one of the struggles we had early on with the left organization that with which we were very close was that they had joined this so-called United Front. And this was against Rizzo, who was a thuggish McCain type, if you will, a person who was in power, had been mayor, and Africans wanted to take over and had created, wanted to change that because Rizzo was criminal in his attacks against African people. And these left forces participated in this United Front to elect the guy, Wilson Good, who would drop the bomb on the community. And this is not a criticism of involving ourselves in electoral politics. It is a criticism, however, for doing so in a manner that could not hold accountable the person for whom they were working to be elected, that did not require this person to have any kind of history. Good had his only history was a hack for the Democratic Party.
He had never done anything to struggle for our folk or anything like that. And it is a criticism of doing that kind of work without maintaining a kind of political independence and building independent revolutionary capacity, you know, at the same time. So we do work, and we work all the time to advance the interests of our people. We have no confidence, and history has shown that we should have no confidence in the ability of the American government or social system itself, both of which came into existence and achieved strength and sustenance through slavery, through the genocide against indigenous people and colonization of the world. We believe that African people will be free as a consequence of our attacking and overturning the relationship that we have with imperial white power, not by joining it in the form of the Democratic Party, or with even if it is represented by a Negro who's holding on to the very same imperialist policies as the white folk have done.
Another question is, you know, recently there was a white woman in Pennsylvania who made a claim that a big black man, that she was a McCain campaign organizer, and she made a claim that some big black man attacked her at an ATM machine and beat her up, and then after seeing a McCain bumper sticker on her car, carved a B in her face, actually a backwards B. I don't know whether he was supposed to be dyslexic or something, but
might have been left-handed.
But in the past, this is something that has led to these types of claims is something that have led to destructions of entire African communities. You know, do you anticipate these types of claims and you know, growing anti-African actions among white people in general if Obama wins, and in general, whether he wins or not?
Well, I want to say two things about that. One is that the fact that this woman would do that belies the nonsense of the Barack candidacy, that we're living in some kind of post-racial America. It is assumed, was assumed by this white woman, if she said that an African did it, that would be enough to win people to an anti-Obama stance. And so that's what I want to say about that. And the other thing, though, is that, you know, Obama is not only supported by Africans. There is a large number of white people who support Obama. And as we've said in the past, that the contradiction here is that the Africans support Obama because they think he represents black power, and the whites support Obama because they think, they know that he doesn't support black power. There is a likelihood that various kinds of attacks are going to continue, as Comrade Diop said in his email against African people. They will be by individuals, and they will be by institutions like the police and things like that, because the ideological aspect of America, of the whole capitalist social system itself, is anti-African. It is a racial, the underpinning of this American and imperialist society is what people refer to as racism. And that's not going away. And in fact, it is so significant that even a black person running for office has to run as a white person. That's how significant this ideological underpinning is here. So we're going to see more of that, and we're going to see individuals acting out. But the other thing we're going to see, too, and we'll see, is because even notwithstanding what the intent of Obama and his imperialist promoters are working toward and what they are attempting to do, millions of Africans are being mobilized, and they are gaining confidence vicariously through this Negro in terms of what we can do as African people, and will be emboldened to step forward as a consequence of his candidacy, even though it will be as individuals, and even though and I think this is going to exacerbate contradictions, as because Africans will believe that Obama really represents something transformative and a better place in this society for African people than what is really the case. And we'll run into the stone wall of oppression in this country, which will help to mobilize them, I believe, and help to give them, allow them to achieve a greater consciousness of what it's going to take to really change our circumstances.
We have another email that's in, and we just got a few more minutes. But this one is from Ona Zene, who says, "Uhuru, Chairman, I really appreciate your analysis on this election. I was wondering, I thought I heard you say that Obama may or may not get elected, depending on if white folks actually vote for him. Do you believe in the polls, and do you think the polls could be wrong in regards to this presidential election?"
The polls could be wrong. And, you know, people talk about the Bradley effect, but it hasn't just simply that Bradley was a guy who was mayor in Los Angeles, and then he ran for a statewide office. I think it was governor, and all the polls indicated that he was going to win, and because all of them said they were going to vote for him, and then they didn't. And what has happened, of course, is that it has now become impermissible for white people to express, normally, well, for white people to express anti-African sentiments. And there's no way for someone to have justified not voting for Bradley, especially since they were mostly Democrats. And especially since he was obviously more more qualified. And so it's happened in other cases, happened with Wilder. Even when he became governor of Virginia, he came by a narrow margin that did not represent the percentage of white folk who said they would vote for him. And then there have been other instances as well. So, yeah, I believe that's a possibility that he won't get elected. But the thing that challenges all of this, that the monkey wrench or the joker in the deck, is the economic collapse. And because normally I think that the white population would elect an incompetent white person over an extraordinarily competent African. But I think that with the crisis of such magnitude in terms of the economy, where people cannot see the future, and this ineptitude on the part of McCain, obvious ineptitude on the part of McCain and his running mate, may be enough to allow white people to do what they normally, to do something other than what normally has been the case. And so possibly he can be elected. But I'm still not sure that it's going to happen, but it's possible because of the economy. And because we know from our own history, when the economy goes haywire, white people do strange things. You know, that's history has shown us that, from, you know, hanging and doing bad things to African people to, you know, using the axe clause for divorces, you know, and just, you know, just really bad things. So one, you know, that's the thing that leaves us with some question as to where the electorate will go, the economy.
All right. We are just about out of time. There's one more email I'd like to read. It's just a short one. And this is from Effia from WMXPLP in Greenville, South Carolina. That's one of our one of the radio stations that syndicates our programming. And Effia says, "Uhuru, so good to have so much of the chairman's time and analysis, and thanks us so."
Uhuru, thank you so much, Mafrika. Thank you for being there with us. Uhuru.
Uhuru. So that's it for today for this program. Well, we got a couple minutes. If there's anything you'd like to say, Chairman, to close us out.
My only closing comment is, it's redundant, really. But I think that the African revolutionaries, I'm not just talking about people who are posturing and out there for, you know, no meaningful reason, but I think that we have to learn how to hold revolutionaries to a higher standard than what we've seen here. I remember one year, and I can't remember when it was, when the Communist Party USA was running someone for president and learned that the majority of the people on its own central committee had voted for the Democratic Party candidate. That was mind-blowing to me. And I think that's what we're seeing now, where the people don't have confidence in their own theory, their own analysis, and the masses of African people. They feel it necessary to tail the masses as opposed to lead the masses. So if the people who are uninformed, who do not have access to the kind of information and science that we presume to have ourselves going into the swamps, then we don't, as opposed to trying to keep the people from the swamps, lead them to dry land, to higher ground, we jump in front and try to be in front of the movement into the swamps. This is a terrible thing for me to behold, and I think that we must begin to call our leaders and hold our leaders to a higher stance, because it's not a matter of personalities. It's not a matter about us and our feelings, but the future of our people, our Africa, is at stake here. And I think that we have to begin to act like that. And I want to thank you too, Comrade Binga, for being here. We are truly proud of you and the work that you do with Uhuru Radio. We have so much more that we have to learn how to do to grow our capacity to speak to the masses of our people, because it is in the absence of being able to speak to our people that the ruling class has such a monopoly on information distribution that makes it possible for a fraud like Obama to be as successful as he's been up to this point. Uhuru.
Uhuru. So we are closing out now, but we'll be back soon with more programming, a discussion with Colonel Alpha Mba, the Director of Organization for the African Socialist International, just momentarily, right here on UhuruRadio.com. We'll be right back.
People's Democratic Uhuru Movement encourages all impeding forces, the Uhuru Movement, and the larger black community to vote power to the people November 4th. Vote for the ticket that supports the Revolutionary National Democratic Program and complete self-determination for the black community. Vote Cynthia McKinney, Rosa Clemente, President and Vice President, at the polls November 4th.
Yeah. 7 years.
Never put up for 10 years.
Then 50 put up 6 months.
Never put up for 1 year.
Then 50 put up 2 years.
Never put up for 5 years.
Then 50 put up 7 years.
Never put up for 10 years.
If not, them go shoot them. Well, them go shoot them for. Them go they hustle to try to make ends meet. Them go put hands for back to try to make ends meet. Them go they beg your God to try to make ends meet. Them go be slaves for them town to try to make ends meet. Oh yes, them go they try to try to make ends meet. Them go they hustle to try to make ends meet.
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and, you know, this past week, Africans from throughout West Africa and elsewhere gathered in Freetown, Sierra Leone, for the first West African Regional Conference of the African Socialist International. I have with me on the line the Director of Organization for the African Socialist International, or ASI, Comrade Cherno Alpha Mba, to speak with us about it. Uhuru, Comrade Cherno.
Yes, Uhuru, Comrade Binga, and Uhuru, everyone.
It's good to have you on with us again.
Thank you.
And can you, first of all, for any new listeners, explain what the ASI is?
Just in brief, the ASI is the African Socialist International. This is a worldwide movement of African workers and poor peasants that is put forward by the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, Chairman Amalia Stella, out of the APSP Congress in 1981. In Oakland, California. So I think the chairman rightfully concluded at the time that the struggle for national liberation, you know, all the struggle of African people for national liberation has run into a limitation, that if we continue to struggle between the colonially defined territories, we will not go anywhere. And going back with experience that happened in the 60s and all of it, so it was concluded that in order for us to be able to move forward as African people and to reclaim our rights, the self-determination and to overturn the conditions that have been imposed on us by imperialism, capitalism, and these neo-colonialist agents in Africa and beyond, we have to build an international movement of African workers and poor peasants that will unite our separate efforts and struggles wherever we are located into a common organization that will provide us with the required leadership, direction, and the tactics and strategies necessary for us to fight for a free United Africa under an all-African socialist government. So several meetings and efforts have been made throughout since that time up to now to consolidate the process of building African Socialist International. Several conferences were held in London right up to 2006, and the last one was held in Ghana. What we are saying is that the African Socialist International is the single organization of African workers and poor peasants around the world that is anchored on the work of Marcus Garvey, Kwame Nkrumah, and the vision for the unification and liberation of African people under an African Socialist government.
Now with this particular conference that happened over this past week in Sierra Leone, can you say what the objectives were of this conference?
Yeah, like I have already mentioned, since 1981 up to this period, we have been involved in the process as led by the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, Chairman Amalia Estrella, to organize the various efforts and struggles of African people all over the world into a common organization that has a common philosophy and explanation of the conditions of African people and what is required of us in order for us to move forward. So the West Africa, the first West Africa Regional Conference of African Socialist International, is part of an international process that has been initiated to organize all African workers and workers and the struggles, various struggles that we are involved in, we are ever allocated because African people are struggling on a daily basis to overcome the conditions that we are faced with. And since the 60s up to this period, there is a growing desire for leadership, a growing desire for an organization that will overturn the conditions that have resulted from centuries of colonialism and the last 60 years of neo-colonial rule in Africa and beyond. So what the West Africa Regional Conference tried to do is to harmonize the various struggles of African people in West Africa and beyond with the aim of establishing or getting them to be part of the process of building African Socialist International, which is the only organization that is capable of providing us with leadership and direction enough for us to move forward. And more than that, it is also designed as part of a process to launch the West African Regional Bureau of the African Socialist International, and at the same time provide the African workers and workers in West Africa with the theory of African internationalism, which is a guiding principle and philosophy for the liberation and education of our people. So more than that, also the conference seeks to examine some of the questions that have served as challenges to the struggles of African people, the question of multinational corporate exploitation, the ongoing deployment of foreign military intelligence agencies in most parts of Africa, or in all of Africa, the United States, the British, the French, and the various European imperialist nations, and the crisis of imperialism, the ongoing crisis of the market economy, and how Africans can organize to deepen that crisis. Because this is a crisis that has been made necessary by the rising resistance of oppressed people throughout the world, in Latin America, in the Pacific, and all over. And how we as Africans, as oppressed people, can come together and discuss the tactics and strategies and adopt the organization that will help us to contribute towards the depth of that crisis, and at the same time, overturning the contradictions within the capitalist economy to our own advantage in order for us to be able to move ahead with the struggle for our own emancipation and liberation and access to the resources that we have, which we could rightfully use to change the deadly condition that has been imposed on us by imperialism and neo-colonialism. So it's a significant conference. More than that, it is also a conference that was designed to provide the African workers and populations with an organization that will mirror their vision and aspiration for the liberation of our people, liberation of Africa and our unification under an African socialist government. So, in brief, it is both one that is meant to reposition Africa in its rightful place in history, removing us from the passive role of becoming spectators of this world historical phenomenon, and also moving us to the position of becoming subjects of history rather than objects of history. So it is a tremendous conference, like I've already mentioned, one that has succeeded in establishing a formidable structure in this region that will provide our people with the required leadership and direction in order for us to move forward in the next phase of struggle. And everybody now knows that Africans are now prepared and willing to move to challenge neo-colonialism and imperialism and struggle for our own rightful place in history.
So this conference was it had attendance from at least 500 people per day. And as I understand it, a socialist conference like has not had this kind of participation in that area since the 30s. What do you think is the reason for this, and what does it mean?
Well, we should know that, like we've already said, we are living in a situation right now in the world where, for the last 500 years, an economy that was built out of our own oppression, out of the exploitation of the vast majority of people of the world, which, you know, have been holding us hostage for a very long time, is faced with one of the most, you know, unimaginable crises in history. So the ongoing collapse of the world economy, capitalist world economy, is an indication that there's going to be challenge, you know, from the oppressed people who have been held hostage by this system. In fact, the crisis itself is one that has been made necessary by, like I said, the rising resistance of, you know, our oppressed people throughout the Middle East, in Latin America, the Pacific, and all over. There's rising resistance against the capitalist world economy. So in Africa, when we are witnessing an ongoing attempt by the capitalists, the imperialists, together with their neo-colonialist allies, to move in a fashion that will rescue capitalism, the capitalist economy, at the expense of the rest of the world, the rest of the oppressed people of the world. So, in essence, this situation has increased the awareness and determination on the part of oppressed people, Africans, the workers and the peasants, to seek for alternatives, an alternative that they think will help to arrest this situation of poverty, wretchedness, backwardness that has resulted from this relationship of oppression. So more than that, for the last 8 years or so in West Africa, there was, before that, there was an organization that was destroyed by the British. So since the 1930s up to this period, all attempts by other forces to consolidate and maybe organize the workers into a formidable organization that will struggle for the realization of our own interests has been challenged and defeated by the imperialists and the neo-colonialist allies on the ground. So the historical phenomenon within these last 2, 3, 4 years offers us some amount of space to organize as a festival and to rally around the question of socialism as an alternative to the future. That we have created a better world for our children and ourselves. And the only way to do that is to build an organization, unite our separate efforts and struggles into a common organization that will struggle for the realization of such an objective. So the world historical, the crisis of imperialism and the instability within the capitalist economy itself is one that has played a major factor in the processes to organize and consolidate these efforts that are made by Africans and other oppressed people to challenge imperialism. So what we witness in West Africa, or in Sierra Leone here, with this conference in the last couple of days, is the consolidation of some of these aspirations and the unity around the fact that it is now time for us to organize and overcome some of these challenges. This does not mean that we came together without challenge, because there has been a challenge and the determination on the part of the neo-colonial the state there to suppress our determination. And we think that the attendance that we had could have been more than that without the intervention directly or indirectly by the state. And there are some other factors which affected some of the attendance. But on the whole, we think it has repositioned the struggles of the other of African people in this region to take, you know, in a way that we will be able to take charge of our role in the creation of a better future for ourselves and generations yet to come.
And as I understand it, speaking of generations, you know, coming to new generations and whatnot. As I understand it, an estimate of about 80% of the participation in the conference was young Africans under the age of 30. Could you speculate as to why that was?
Well, most of the micro states within the African region has a population that is below the ages of 30. And the thing is that life expectancy in most of these areas, a man doesn't go beyond 40 years. For instance, life expectancy of a man is 37. And the vast majority of the population falls within what is being described as the youth population. So it is obvious that any kind of organization that is a mass organization that is tied to the masses have its constituency based on this age bracket, this so-called youthful population. So more than that, the history of West Africa within the last 15 years has shown that this active movement of young people and their efforts have been to overturn the conditions. So this situation had several implications. The young people have been transformed into groups, you know, rebellious groups that fought for the interest, misleadingly, for the interest of the Kati bourgeoisie. This majority of them in action, or have been into action, fighting on different sides in crises that were feared by the growing scandal by various multinational corporations for the exploitation of the resources in the region. So, more than that, this population constituency, in this case the youth population itself, suffers some of the most challenging situations. They are living in a situation where there is massive unemployment, and young people are viewed as a threat to the so-called stability or the ability of the middle class of the population to continue to exploit or benefit from this relationship of oppression that they have been maintaining with the people. So it's obvious that it's not a coincidence that the movement that has mass following in this area has to have its membership coming largely from, you know, what is described as the youthful population because of the population dynamics and the conditions that have that the region has in itself. So these are some of the factors. And more than that, like I said, this youth population have no jobs, they have no access to some of the facilities, and it's a disguise just like any other group of African people, the women and things like that. So this represents a potent future, a potent force for the future. And it is no coincidence that 80% of those who attended the conference are below the within that age bracket that is referred to as youthful population. I think this also provides us with an opportunity to move into the future as young people, very determined, very skillful. They have always been used, you know, political parties, middle class political parties always rely on this constituency to carry out their own activities. Youth have been used as gangs, as groups to orchestrate misleading political violence and all forms of terror against their own brothers and sisters, and what this conference offers them is an opportunity to use their skills and energies for the creation of a better future for themselves and for the rest of the population. So it is a transformation, a whole sort of social transformation that's taking place right now.
We're talking here with Colonel Alpha Mba, the Director of Organization for the African Socialist International. We're going to take a break here, but when we come back, we'll be talking a bit more about the conference that just happened October 20th through 22nd in Sierra Leone, Freetown, Sierra Leone, for the ASI.
have to be. Only the people can make a real revolution. So that's who we serve. All these ass kissing Uncle Tom niggas got no concern. We got nothing to gain off this plantation but making it burn. They should tell her destroyed everything. They schools was making us learn. He told us crack is living good off our wealth. They didn't earn. That's why they shoot you in the back as soon as you start making a turn. On them.
As we walk towards Africa.
We stay disciplined 24/7 because crack is a setting of trap for us. We don't slip when them pretty face dimes throw ass at us. We taking a stride, even the baddest chicken where we're riding. You got agents approaching you from every angle, trying to get you taken and twisted. But everything we do stay explicit. The state will try to say we trafficking drugs, taking our right to have the gun. We still gonna bust gang on our sons and daughters, cause they the future, so they can shoot you today. Another generation to rise from the roots like Boosta. We've been through the worst torture up in Harlem, in Haiti, in London, in Mother Africa. We all starving, so we all brawling. In revolution, we gon' spark it. We reach farther and keep dropping science till we martyrs. To live and die for the people, we be honored. The struggle might be hard, but we harder. That's why we sing.
Living this life is a rebel.
Listening to Africa Live on AhuraRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we have on the line with us Comrade Chernow Alpha Mba, the Director of Organization for the African Socialist International. We've been talking about the conference that happened in Freetown, Sierra Leone, the first West Africa regional conference that happened on October 20th through 22nd. And we'd like for you to participate in this discussion. Those of you who are listening, you can do so by calling the U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599, or you can call the U.K. number, which is 020-8133-6629, or you can call us through Skype. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio. That's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. Comrade Chernow, I was looking at the general resolution that came out of the conference, and in it were several things that I'd like to ask you about. One thing is it states, it says, the trial of African leaders and others accused of committing crimes against African people should be the task of the African masses and not the imperialists. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, this we think is very, very much important because we have to take the case of Charles Taylor, for example, who is currently facing trial in The Hague for crimes that he committed against our people in West Africa. So we think that this trial and the trial of other people who are accused of having committed offenses against African people should be the responsibility of the people themselves who suffered from that particular act. As a matter of fact, we feel that the United States government and the Europeans who are allocating to themselves the right to try African people themselves guilty of the offenses that they are trying some of these leaders for. For instance, Taylor will not have become a warlord, or he will not have been the capacity to carry out the genocide that they carried out against our people in West Africa if the United States government had not released him from jail and had not supported him throughout the period of the conflict. So if Taylor should be arrested, we think that the United States government should be the first that should be indicted for the crimes that are committed against our people. So we think that such a process should be one that is controlled by the people, by us, you know, by African people who suffered from the activities, the vigorous activities of some of these groups of leaders who are responsible for the administration of our people, for the death of thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in Africa. So by removing or by allocating them to themselves the right people, it equally shows that we have no control over our own affairs. So the reason why we think this is important is because justice can only be seen to be done when the people themselves who suffered from the act are the ones who are administering the justice, and not individuals who are part of the orchestration of the crime, claiming to have, to carry out such a dispensation of justice. Therefore, the United States government itself is filled with the blood of the innocent African Nazis there and in other parts of the world, you know, that they continue to kill on a regular and daily basis. So we see no justice in the criminal and the culprit that is struggling to carry out the trial in the name of justice. So that's a mockery of justice. We think that the African people should have the right to decide for ourselves what we want to do with criminals or people who have committed crimes against us. And the process to have access over our own justice, the system of our own judicial system, is one that relates to the question of power itself. So we think that this is one of the fundamental things that we think the conference came up with. That in order for us to decide the timing, we have to be in charge of our own affairs, both judicial and whatever it is that has to do with Africa. And African people should be controlled by the Africans themselves, and not by some other group of nations who are equally guilty of genocide, of the slavery, of colonialism, of the raping of African women and all kinds of other crimes that cannot be described.
You spoke to the question of really us being able to determine, you know, what happens to people who commit crimes against us, and even I think to determine who our enemies are as African people, for us to be able to define that for ourselves. It reminds me of an email that we got following our announcement of this show, and we stated in the email that the government of Iran, through its ambassador, made a statement of solidarity with the conference of the African Socialists International. And following that, an email came to us from one of the people who receives our regular emails, that said he didn't want to receive emails from us anymore because the government of Iran supports the government of Sudan, and he's for Africa, for Africans, so he didn't want to hear about what we were doing. What's your view on that?
Well, we think that the situation with Sudan is a very complicated one, but has been made complicated by the dishonesty of some of the African intellectuals who are emphasizing the significance of the so-called Arab contradiction. So we think this is an issue that we examined at the conference. One of the fundamental things that came up with is the question of identity, who we are as Africans, and what do we mean by being an African. So we think that the fundamental contradiction that we have is not one that has to do with ourselves, but one that has to do between us and capitalism and imperialism. and the leading capitals and the previous nation is United States government and its European allies. So we think that there are forces, of course, there are forces within that area who are arguing that Africa cannot be united with the north of the continent. That is, Africa part of the Sahara can have unity independent of North Africa. But that is in itself is a complete, is a wrong conclusion. It's a wrong conclusion because Nkrumah said it, that all Africa, together with its islands, should be united and not be united under an all-African socialist government. So the further partitioning of the continent will not help. So we think that that individual is prejudiced by his own thinking, because the primary contradiction is with neo-colonialism, with imperialism, and not one that has to do with Arabs or Africans. And that the people they refer to in the Sudan as Arabs are equally black people. You know, they are Africans. There's no difference between myself and some of those people that have been referred to as Arabs. So the misguided, the question of misguided identity, you know, is one that should be addressed and that we continue to address. But we believe that part of our intervention in the Sudan and is to help the communities in that area to see the broader picture, to feel, you know, the question, to see the broader aspect of the question. And that is one way that we think the African Socialist International can impact upon the struggle in Sudan. You know, we realize the contradictions in Sudan, but they are not different from what we face in West Africa, any other part of African people exist. But the fundamental thing, and we should understand that the United States government in itself has tremendous influence in the struggle in South Sudan and Darfur, because what they are trying to do now is to support any movement that tends to be in opposition to the Arabs, to the so-called Arabs, because the resistance that's carried out in the Middle East and in other areas in Asia is predominantly led by the Arab Liberation Movement itself. So it's a direct challenge to U.S. imperialism, it's a direct challenge to the capitalist economy. So if there's a movement that will remove the contradiction to one that has to do with Arabs, then it means the United States government can support it. Most of those forces who are talking on that level are people who are the service of the United States government, the CIA. So what we are trying to do in essence is to identify the most progressive, the most credible of the forces within that region who could be part of the process of building an organization that's committed to one Africa, one nation. So we think that the Iranian embassy and this Iranian ambassador, by coming to the government and expressing solidarity with the struggles of African people, was the right position, because all of us are fighting against a common enemy. The enemy of your enemy, you know, is virtually your ally. So we see nothing wrong in forming alliances with people who are opposed to imperialism, who are opposed to capitalism. In the final analysis, the struggles, like we said earlier, the struggles of oppressed people in Asia, in the Middle East, and in Latin America, that has led to the depth of the crisis that imperialism is currently facing. So an alliance between the African Liberation Movement and any other anti-colonial movement that's fighting against capitalism and imperialism is one that is obvious and one that will increase the strength of our efforts against imperialism itself. So I don't think it has to be made a contradiction, or there's any contradiction in that. Like you said, the people who are emphasizing the primacy or the primary nature of the Arab contradiction in the Sudan and other areas, you know, are people who are largely, you know, at the service of the United States government, and they are using the Arab, so-called Arab question in that area as a way of obscuring the actual fact of the struggle, the actual contradiction itself. So we do not be bothered by that. Our intervention in the Sudan is one that is designed to identify the most progressive of the forces in that area who could be try to a worldwide movement of African Russian and Boston that's designed to return all of these contradictions that we face and the consequence of parasitic capitalism.
I like to go back to the general resolution. The resolution also speaks to the question of the right of return of the dispersed African population. What makes this question so significant?
Well, one thing you should understand is that slavery, colonialism, and the ongoing assault against Africa by Europe and North America is one that has not only meant the extraction of the mineral wealth of Africa, but it has deprived us access to resources that are valuable to our existence, human resources. For instance, there are over 120 million Africans in Latin America and the Caribbean alone. This is a constituency that is part of a population that was stolen from Africa, but has lost a better way of life as a consequence of being taken to those areas of the world. And we think that these resources have been used for the industrialization of Europe and North America at our own expense. And we feel that this population constitutes our brothers and sisters who have been taken away from the continent and whose birthright belongs here. And they should have rightful access to Africa. So we think that the collectivization of the skills and expertise of Africans requires for us to come together as Africans wherever we are and contribute towards the liberation of our people. So the right of return for Africans that has been dispersed around the world due to slavery, colonialism, and these other forms of power that are still ongoing is one that is tremendously significant, because we need to come together as Africans in order for us to have a rightful future. Because for a very long time now, we've been misinformed to believe that we are not part of one nation, that Africans in the United States and other parts of the world do not identify with Africa, and that Africans on the continent do not share the feelings and aspirations of our people outside of Africa, in the U.S., in Europe, in the Caribbean, and other areas, to as one. We do not consider it as one, but we have said that is a complete lie. It's a very big lie, and that we have affirmed the rights of our brothers and sisters, wherever they are, to come back to Africa and contribute towards the industrialization and rapid development of Africa as part of the liberation and unification of the continent. In the final analysis, we have been told that even if we are left on our own, Africa does not have the human resource to contribute to its own development. So we believe that there are doctors, there are nurses, there are various sorts that are established of imperialism and contributing towards contributing towards development of that part of the world, that imperialist block of the world that we think can be useful as skills and energies and expertise, education can be useful towards the development of Africa. After all, this is part of the process of reuniting ourselves, of coming together again and liberating ourselves from isolation. So that is why we think that the right of return for Africans who have been dispersed around the world is key towards the struggle for a free United Africa.
excuse me. Now, I understand also that there were attempts by the government to stop the conference. Can you speak on those and how the organizers overcame those attempts to sabotage the conference?
Well, like you said, since the 1930s, there has not been socialist gathering of this nature that has attracted such a large number of participants. I think the level of information dissemination and organizing ability terrified the state, and they could not sleep and allow such an opportunity, because they know they are in deep crisis and people are struggling for an opportunity to overcome some of these challenges which the conference provided. So what happened was the state confiscated the venue, and initially they never wanted to give us the venue, so there was pressure coming in and out, and we are talking about it in the papers, and besides, the conference was widely covered by the press, including even the imperialist media, the BBC and some of the other imperialist media institutions. So it became an issue of international significance. So the state was caught between the question of allowing, because masses were so desperate and they were willing to challenge and take on whatever means if the conference was stopped. So it was like they were weighing the weight of the conference and what it would mean if they stopped the conference. So earlier on, they told us they were not going to give us access to the hall. and they sabotaged the event by using the hall for 3 hours before before they could turn it over to us. So even what we discovered later was that some people who came to the event were even told that the event was no longer happening. So some people went back home. So and calls were even made to other people that the event wasn't going to take place because the government was using the venue. So these are all attempts by the state to sabotage the event, and it impacted on the attendance. We were hoping to have more people in the room than what we had, and some of these situations was directly tied to the state. So we, on our own part, we are resolved and determined that the conference must happen. It was that determination that helped us rally the people. Around the fact that we have paid for the venue and we have the right to the venue. So, in the final analysis, the power of the masses will always overcome, and which is why we were able to have access to the hall and we successfully held our meeting.
Now, this conference seems to, not just seems to have been, is clearly a really significant conference that happened, a step in the direction of the liberation of African people and the unification of Africa. What is the way forward now? What is next?
Well, we have issued the 25-point resolution that calls for, among other things, that all multinational corporations that are involved in the theft of resources in Africa must be forced to cease operations with immediate effect, and also forced to pay reparations to our people for the theft of the resources that they have been. And more than that, we also called on, we also said that all foreign military persons, security agencies, intelligence agencies, Western intelligence agencies that are currently operating, including IMAT and AFRICOM, must withdraw from the continent. And we even called on Africans all around the world to unite and constantly oppose the United States government and any other neocolonial regime in Africa that supports the deployment of AFRICOM on the continent. So we also demanded that reparations should be paid to Africa. So what we intend to do with this resolution is to massify the information, to hold public meetings, to move across the region, develop the program, the mass campaign that will take us to every district, every strategic community that African people are in West Africa, starting from Sierra Leone to Guinea-Conakry and other places, so that this resolution will become part of the revolutionary program of the people, that this should be one that the people should struggle to implement. This will mean we hope that within the next couple of months, 1 month or so, we should be able to disseminate this information widely to our people and at the same time organize them to struggle for the implementation of such a program. We believe that the realization of such a program will be a major step towards the actualization of our vision. So we are developing a strategy at the moment that will culminate in the development and practicalization of a mass mobilization campaign in the region, one that will unite the people with this program and the process to build the ASI. All of that, we have to massify the information and at the same time struggle around the implementation of such a resolution. All multinational corporations must go, they must leave, and this is something that the masses have to take on. So our task at the moment is to organize the people, the masses, around these questions and at the same time struggle for the actualization. This would be the key towards the realization of our objective and vision. So we intend to use whatever means at our disposal to carry out some of these objectives. More than that, on the other front, we are also organizing in other regions. Like I know we are currently pulling together the work to build Southern Africa Regional Conference for the African Association International that will duplicate the effort and the what we have done in West Africa. Based on our own projections, by December 2009, we should be able to have the African Socialist International in every place that African people are. At least 80% of the areas where African people are located, both in Africa and outside of Africa. So that is part of a plan of action that has been initiated that we are currently working on. And the West Africa Regional Conference is the commencement of that plan of action, which we hope to complete by December 2009.
All right. Well, we are running out of time at this point, but I'd like to thank you again, Comrade Chernow, for being on with us today to talk about the extremely significant conference that just happened there in Sierra Leone. I would implore those of our listeners out there to listen to actually go, to the ASI website. That's www.asiuhuru.org. That's asiuhuru.org. And get more information on how to become a part of the African Socialist International. It's extremely significant for the future of African people. It is central to the future of African people, to a united and liberated Africa. That's it for the program for today, for Africa Live for today. But stay tuned, because next up we have Uhuru on the Move, which is hosted by Comrade President Ivory Sobukwe Sodaye and Comrade Kobina Bantu Shango. Stay tuned here on UhuruRadio.com.
See, what I'm saying is, ain't nobody gonna do this for us but us. Talk about a Barack Obama. Don't even talk to me about Barack Obama. Let's talk about Marcus Garvey. You know what I'm saying? The question ain't whether we vote for white power and white face or white power and black face. The question is whether we will be an independent people or whether we remain colonized and oppressed until we are wiped out. Africa Live. This is African internationalism in action, y'all. Y'all need to get up on this. When we say we have to have power in our own hands, here we're talking about the African working class. But what we can do is to have an organized capacity of the African workers in alliance with the poor peasants who takes state power for itself. Then we can begin to say we got justice in our own hands.
Africa Live.
Raise up these incredible African leaders that we've had. It's critical that as African people we strive to be like them. I'm talking about the Marcus Garveys. I'm talking about the Fannie Lou Hamers. I'm talking about the Malcolm X's, the Kwame Nkrumahs, and today we have Omali Eshitela. Brothers and sisters, Africans at home and abroad, welcome to Africa Live. Get your hands on the 2010 historical calendar chronicling the history of the African People's Socialist Party and its chairman, Omali Eshitela.
12 months of history.
This beautiful full-color calendar contains pictures of Chairman Omali Eshitela with other historical figures like Ella Baker, Huey P. Newton, Robert Williams, Winnie Mandela, and more.
also see pictures from the campaigns led by Chairman O'Malley and Shatella for more than four decades. Look on your calendar and see important dates in history.
What history happened on your birthday?
This limited edition collector's item is up for pre-sale now for just $25 at BurningSpearMarketplace.com. When you get this calendar, you won't just get to see history, but you'll be part of history as the calendar sales raise money for the work of the party. To order your calendar, call 727-824-5700 or buy online at BurningSpearMarketplace.com. Again, that's BurningSpearMarketplace.com. Type Uhura Radio in the special message field and get your free Uhura Radio bumper sticker along with your calendar. See the history, be in history.
Yash go, Yash must fall. Up, left, right, round, round, it must fall. And nothing where Yash they do not is sweet. Shit, beat, fuck, it is sweet. Why not? Because Yash now wonderful material property. Whether you like or you know like, after you hear this the true talk. Whether you like or you know like, after you hear this the true talk. If you like it good, if you know like you hang, if you like it good, if you know like you hang, if you hang you go die, you go die for nothing. We go carry your body go police station, you die wrongfully. Gege, 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 gege. See, man, I get different look for woman yash. See, see small yash, go see, yeah, look at this big yash. If you can't see big yash, you go see, yeah, look at this small yash. And if you see one yash, where you want to bury your brick inside, you go say, hey, baby, show me your particulars. I don't know the English, you go say, hey, darling, show me your living license. Particular, not be police particular, that one a crazy particular. Uh-huh. Hey. You see, police particular, if you get them, you could go. If you not get them, you go enter, you see. But the original particular, natural particular, if you not get them, you could go. But if you get them, you must enter. Whether you like or you know like, after you hear this the true talk. Whether you like or you know like, after you hear this the true talk. If you like it good, if you know like you hang, if you like it good, if you know like you hang, if you hang you go die, go die for nothing. Go carry your body, go police station, you die wrongfully. Gege, 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 gege,
suffer him no fi talk na condition. Man they suffer him fi talk na condition too. Man they suffer him no fit talk na condition. Man they suffer him fi talk na condition too. Suffer de Africa bakbarakba. A suffer day, bakbarakba. Condition day, bakbarakba. Me, I no say you be African man. And we dey suffer, bakbarakba. Which condition you dey, I don't know. The condition me, I dey, me, I know. My condition don't reach, make I act. Oh! If your conditions today make you shake and you still did not talk the way you feel, make you open your two ears very well to the yard, the truth talk way, yeah, they talk. Listen, make you day grieve for me every day at night today, yeah, me talk. One day you say.
So, campaign, we're certain that from now to.